This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by Kinetics. From driver all the way to putter, Kinetics utilizes a proprietary vacuum curing process to maximize performance at the fiber level. Visit PattersonShafts.com to learn more.
THP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome everyone to a brand new episode of Off Course. This one's on location at the THP Tech Studio, and I'm joined today by Mr. Chris Koski from Edel Golf. Chris, welcome. Glad you're here. Glad to have you.
Thanks for having me. It's fun to be here in kind of the candy land of golf clubs, so it's an absolute pleasure.
The candy land of golf clubs. Now, we've had a few folks in. That's the first time I've heard it called that. I've heard a lot of things here, mostly positive, probably all positive at this point.
I would imagine.
But yeah, I like that. So you are coming in from Colorado.
That's correct.
And it looks a little bit different here at HQ than it does there. Are you surviving snowpocalypse?
Yeah, so snowpocalypse was interesting. So I was supposed to fly out here Monday morning and everything got canceled and the entire state got shut down. But happy to come out here for what is going to turn into a torrential downpour and thunderstorm, apparently. Yeah. So I brought the weather with me.
So it is currently 1:54 local time. We should be probably on hole 8 right now, but we're not.
Correct.
Tragic, I know. You had planned to candy land up your own version of a golf bag while you were here. Are you kind of sad you don't get that experience now?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. You know, haven't been playing as much over the past few weeks because of the snow, and so it was going to be a special treat, but nonetheless, I'm sure we'll get another opportunity.
Well, we are going to have a bit of fun in Nashville later. Probably not going to record anything after we're done with that, but while I do have you here, I do want to say everyone can check out Chris on Twitter. I know his handle better than he does. It's at Chris Koski. Don't know how you scored that name. Very common name out there in the public.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but also Edel Social. Can you throw up anything anywhere people can find you?
Yeah, so Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for Edel Golf. I believe it's Edel _golf is the exact handle. And then our YouTube page. We've got just a ton of video content on there that really crosses over from kind of the club knowledge of David and the team to the instructional side of things, which makes our brand a little bit unique.
I think it's a perfect segue into say what's happening with Edel right now. You have, since we are recording this a little bit early, but it's being sent out to be digested later on, we can talk about some product for the first time, which is the new wedges you have going on. Mm-hmm. You have what appears to be a phenomenal putter fitting experience.
Mm-hmm.
What else is going on at Edel, and what do we see in the future from you?
Yeah, so, you know, kind of fascinating story of Edel for years and David working as an instructor. And really that's kind of what started the company was, you know, his knowledge of the swing and working backwards to the element of fitting. And I always kind of say it's a little bit probably ahead of its time as we see a different retail environment now where fitting has taken on a much larger scale than it did in the past. Where these tools that David's been working on and honing for the last 25 years are really coming to a point where the market is able to use them and digest the information and sell products accordingly. For me, you know, coming to a company like this is really fun. And, you know, I spent a long time at Callaway in the corporate world. Took a few years off and started working with some small businesses and, you know, working with private equity firms and then moving to Edel that has a new owner. But, you know, it's a relatively small company and it's just been fun for me because you can make such an impact in everything that you do. And, you know, I was talking to a friend about it and he said, you know, one of the cool things about a small company is there's nowhere to hide. And in a big company, you do see that from time to time, but you know, every single decision and every single action that everybody on the team takes on a daily basis makes an impact. And that's just been fun for me. Especially as we move forward and transition the Edel business, and brand, to a much bigger level. And that's where we're at right now.
I want to talk a little bit about identity of Adele, because maybe it's just the beauty of the product you put together. Wedges are a very customized feature nowadays. You get a sense of a very boutique profile when you look at your wedges. At least that's what's out there. Mm-hmm. I've seen some, you know, nice fancy manipulations on the backside, which is obviously a great canvas to work on. Mm-hmm. Is Adele going to be a more premium but not quite boutique presence moving forward?
That's an interesting question. I think it's a little bit of both, and that's the beauty of where our brand lives. And in talking to the new wedge specifically, we don't have a product name on there. It doesn't say forged on the product, even though it's forged. If this was a stock retail club, you would absolutely have those things on there. But the amount of customization that we're going to be able to put on what you call blank canvas on the back of this wedge just frees us up to do so many things. And so, you know, while we are increasing our distribution around the world and bringing out products that I think can resonate both in a hardcore fitting environment or what I call, you know, fit by adjustability, we've got the ability to do a little bit of both. And so I think that we can straddle that line pretty well.
I want to touch a bit more on you personally, because Some THPers know you. Now, I know we got a bit wider of an audience with Off Course, being that it's a podcast that's digested out there. You are not specifically just a golfer, and Colorado's not a bad place to be an other things kind of guy. And I think you have some engagement prior to your time at Adele with outdoor manufacturers. Yeah. What else drives you on a daily basis outside of work and family life?
That's a great question, and it's funny because I've always been a person who's had a lot of different interests, and one of my friends is like, hey, everything you do is kind of ankle deep except for golf probably. And I said, that's fair. But you know, one of the reasons I moved out to Colorado was to be closer to skiing. Mm-hmm. When we lived in San Diego, Carlsbad area, we had season passes to Mammoth, which was a 6.5 hour drive to get really good powder. Right now I can drive 45 minutes out the door from my house and I'm skiing. I can get to Breckenridge in 1 hour and 10. I can get to Vail in 1 hour and 20 minutes. So I love getting out on the slopes, especially with, I've got a young daughter, she's 6 and she's starting to ski right now. So that's been a lot of fun. And in the summertime where I really have to balance having 2 kids playing golf, and mountain biking, I love mountain biking. Out my back door, I can get to trails in 10 minutes and go for 15 mile bike rides on some pretty wild stuff. So, trying to balance hobbies has always been a challenge. I basically traded the mountain biking out for surfing is what I was doing in Carlsbad a little bit. I was a terrible surfer, by the way.
No one said you had to be good at it. This is an angle deep conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. One of the things we had chatted about over the last couple of days is climbing and the different experiences there. And that was something that I had a pretty big passion for before I got heavy back into golf. Do you do much climbing? Are you familiar with it? What's your line there?
So I spent 3 years outside of the golf industry, mm-hmm. Until September of this past year. And I worked for a company that was really unique. It was called Headrush Technologies. And we made auto belays for climbing gyms, and not just climbing gyms, but adventure parks and amusement parks around the world. It's fascinating. My mom, I think, is maybe 68, 70 years old. I don't know. Sorry, Mom. And she's actually been a mountain climber my entire life, her most of her life. And she's climbed the Grand Teton in Wyoming.
Wow.
She's done a bunch of climbs in Yosemite. So I grew up climbing a little bit. And then as I got older, I grew this fear of heights for some reason. And so, like, now when our gutter's leaking, I send my wife up the ladder because I can't do it, which was unique working at a climbing company. I signed some of the best climbers in the history of the world, and Chris Sharma and Kevin Jorgensen. And, you know, I'd go to lunch with these guys, and, I mean, they are the top of their game. Mm-hmm. You know, the Tiger Woods of climbing, essentially, is who Chris Sharma is. And I'm sitting there having these discussions with them, and I'm like, I don't want to get on the top of a ladder. I always thought that was pretty funny and landed in a unique spot. But one thing that that taught me, and this is why I've had so much fun over the past few years, is I told people I learned how to learn again. Mm-hmm. So working in golf for so long and being semi-insulated, I don't want to say I stopped learning, but going to a different industry that I wasn't as familiar with really forced that upon me to really kind of look at things from a market perspective or from a channel perspective and understand the business in a different way. And I think I've grown so much over the past few years because of it.
So now that we've gotten a little depth there, I did some climbing as well, very casual. I'm by no means an expert, but I grew an intense, not fear, but I knew that my limit had peaked when I was trying to do trad climbing and realized yes. that setting my own stuff is actually really terrifying.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny because sport climbing, you're using anchors that someone else has built. You don't know who they are. Yep. You don't know when it happened.
But there's a trust level for some reason.
But yeah, there's this like pure faith mechanism that comes into play.
Yep.
The one thing that I think ties everything in together is, this is for golf specifically, is number one, I'm not sure my forearms were ever stronger. And I know the old guys in the industry and even guys like Ernie would say, the stronger your forearms are, the better you are at handling a club head.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is just pure confidence.
Yep.
You have confidence in climbing. You can pretty much go to depths you didn't know you had. And I think that kind of correlates to golf a lot,
mm-hmm.
where you get into a condition where you start questioning yourself. You start questioning the shot you're going to produce. And you start double crossing. You start doing all mm-hmm. the things that you want to avoid.
Yeah.
For you as a golfer, just basically, how much does doing these other activities and having this sort of confidence to go heavier or more aggressive, does that relate to your golf game at all?
Yeah, I'd say I think a little bit, and it probably comes more out of humility than anything. and just, you know, I never really take myself too seriously when I'm doing the things that I love to do. And I think that translates in golf to where I don't put a lot of pressure on myself. And I'm okay. If I have a bad round, I'm okay not playing for 2 or 3 weeks and just forgetting the bad habits. Mm-hmm. And then going back out there and enjoying myself again. You know, I grew up playing golf. And my high school team was kind of the Bad News Bears of golf. I mean, we were some miscreants for sure. and so we never really took ourselves that seriously. And I think that probably has a lot to do with it, but kind of keeps the mind free.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about from a perspective of error? Because you talked about mountain biking.
Mm-hmm.
You start getting a little aggressive out there, you make an yeah. error, you're going to be sore for months.
Yes.
Whereas in golf, you make an error, you're going to be sore mentally for about a minute and a half, and then
yeah.
maybe you're over it. It's kind of a different mentality to have where you have that freedom to make the mistake, and maybe that helps you to have a more casual perspective on the game of golf, which is something I love to do. I used to take golf so seriously. Coming out of a competitive hockey background, I was like in the hole every time, or I've blown it, I need to get really mad, really intense, because it's hockey, and then you can't really translate that to golf. And
mm-hmm.
it took me years to get out of that mentality. Do you find it easier where you have more strenuous activities to be able to rail it back when you go golfing and say, this is a casual, good time, no fear of problems, anything
yeah.
like that?
Yeah, and I think it really drives from finding moments where you want to and need to focus.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're skiing trees, and I was in Steamboat a couple of weeks ago, there was a lot of snow, and we started getting fast through the Aspen Glades, and it's like there are times where you have to lock in or you're going to get in trouble. And,
yeah.
you know, we hiked up some pretty steep stuff and skied some chutes that if you're not focusing hardcore, you're in trouble. And so you can turn it on and off, and in golf, kind of the same thing is, you know, I'll go out and enjoy the round, but, you know, there are those moments where you're going to get laser focused. And maybe some of that's a carryover from the other
okay.
sports I do. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to go in a different direction,
all
and
right.
I'm going to ask you a threatening question.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for it?
I think so.
I saw a video of your son swinging a golf club, and I've watched you swing golf clubs here in the tech studio.
Yeah.
At what point does golf become stressful again because your son's about to beat you? How many years down the line are we looking? Is it 10?
Well, he turns 3 this week, and his swing is probably close to better than mine
already. It's pretty muddy, yeah.
Yeah, as soon as he gets some muscle, I think that is going to be some stress, and that will be a time where, you know, I am a competitive person. So
it changes entirely.
Yes, it will change pretty quickly, I think, to the point where, yeah, we're probably not too far. I bet it's probably 8 or 9 years where he's going to be challenging me,
unfortunately. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And you have a daughter as well, who's a little bit older.
Yep.
They both clearly have shown interest based on the social media posts you put out there. Yeah. You got them out there putting with you.
Yep.
Doing some casual nines or whatever it may be.
Yep.
That's got to feel good as a dad to know that you can bring that part of your life to your kids.
Yeah, and we talked about this a little bit last night. You know, my daughter is casually interested. My son walks around every waking moment with a plastic club in his hand. And when there's not snow out, even sometimes when there is, he's hitting 25 to 50 wiffle balls a day just in the front yard or in the backyard. And he absolutely loves it. It's kind of weird and surreal. He'd rather watch golf on TV than cartoons half the time, which is just very strange to me. I think he likes watching golf more than I do.
How about that work ethic? It would be nice to feel that way. You know, I've got a five-year-old at home, and I remember it might have been 6 years ago when I felt the same way. When I got free time, hitting the range. Mm-hmm. Now it's like when I got free time, I might, you know, lay down on the couch, have a little nap,
yep,
scroll THP, whatever I'm doing. It'd be cool to get back to that mentality of better.
Yeah.
But it's always fun to watch your kids really dial into whether it's something they're doing to better educate themselves or a sport like golf. Yeah. And man, this is a big year for me too.
Yeah.
As hopefully golf slows down a little bit, we get a more free time to take the kids out there.
Yeah.
I've got big expectations. Not for my kid beating me.
Yeah.
What I want him to do is to beat his papa.
Well, and he's five, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's welcome to take a run at dad. That's fine. But hopefully papa's listening out there. That's the goal, is to get him beat first. Maybe get him more engaged in his game.
Yeah. It's funny because I see social media posts, and I've got friends that play, you know, three generations of
cool.
golf at a time. And, you know, we'll get out and laugh at my dad playing, because he didn't really play when I was growing up. And I've gotten him into the game a little bit, and he's been showing some signs of improvement lately. Not that I haven't spent a whole lot of time with him because of COVID over the last year, but he's definitely piqued an interest. It'll be interesting to see the three generations play together.
I like that. Yeah. My grandfather was a little bit too old when I really got into golf to play with him, but he would ride with us in the cart. And that man was a stick. He's got, I mean, I have zero hole ones, so it's not a big feature, but he's definitely got more than I do. He's got a bunch of trophies in the house. I'm hoping Cal, my son, takes that same sort of mentality moving forward. And that it, yeah, I mean, it's just an exciting thing. And I love to see different people in the industry and people, especially on social, posting about families getting together playing. My mm-hmm. wife plays a little bit. I wish mm-hmm. she'd play more. So yep. hopefully she's listening.
Come on.
You know, trigger that one. But yeah, it's cool that your kids are into it. And,
yeah.
and obviously that's not all they're doing, but yeah, golf's a great equalizer, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's fun because we live by a golf course in Colorado, and it is, there's 27 holes. It's a public course. They just redid all the irrigation. They just redid the clubhouse. So it's a great place to be. It's just really fun to be able to get the family out there on a regular basis. And I can walk to the putting green in about 5 minutes. And so we spend a lot of time there.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Let's change directions a little bit, because being that this is getting released after your new wedges are
mm-hmm.
provided to the world, not that you haven't been teasing them like crazy already, but you have a brand new system called Swing Match Weighting.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look crazy different from a wedge perspective, and you certainly maintain those clean lines that Adele is pretty well known for at this mm-hmm. point. I think a lot of people out there want to know, and we will have features on THP to showcase what's going on, but in your own words, give some sort of expectation for golfers who want to get those in their hands and what they'd experience from the whole process.
I'm going to go a little bit backward, because there's just a funny story to it. When I got a call from a guy named Nick Raffel, he ran Pro Tour for Callaway for about 10 years, I believe. He's been in the golf industry for a long time. And he called me when I was driving home from work one day. and it was raining so hard, I could hear about every other word. But essentially, it was like, hey, do you want to get back in golf? Adele Golf's doing some cool things. There's a new owner. I think he lives close to you. The basis of the story. So I went and met them for tacos, which those of you who know me know I have a penchant for Mexican food. And with the new owner and Nick, and they pulled out some waxes in the golf industry. It's wax models of these new wedges. And they started explaining the story to me and what David and Neil, the guy that runs our R&D department, had put together. And I was blown away by it. And it made the decision to come on board a little bit easier. And then, you know, when we got down to Liberty Hill, Texas, where we're headquartered, and started playing around with them, is when I really realized we had something special. So the new wedges, which are going to be launched in April 2021, so around the time that this will be out, are absolutely phenomenal. And I always tell people, you know, when you have the chance to launch a product that will change the way products are made in that category, be it putters or wedges or irons, it's a really special time, and it doesn't happen very often, maybe once a decade or so. But these new wedges have essentially adjustable weights that you can move around in the sole of the golf club to fit your natural swing. And, you know, we've played around with them quite a bit, and I think, you know, a lot of people, it'll be met with skepticism. And
not a lot of people. I mean, I'm sitting here with an open mind in the tech studio and quietly thinking in my head, yeah, okay, this looks great, Chris, why are we doing this? And then, boom.
And then the results happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is the coolest part, because people will see these instant results. And so what I think it's going to do for wedges is, A, it's going to transform fitting. It's going to, and it's one of the most underfit categories in golf. But now you've got the ability to change out these weights to really fine tune to your swing. So if you're a steep golfer, you move the weight towards the heel. If you're maybe an under or a shallow picker of the ball, move it out to the toe, and you're going to see better results. So it's going to give fitters this ability, but it's also going to give players the ability to adjust and kind of do some things that they've never been able to do with their wedges. And like what we talk about is people like to tinker. Yeah. And now you've got the ability to do it in wedges for what I believe is the first time. And it's been a category that's been void of a lot of what I would call true technology, mm-hmm. or technological leaps, if you will.
Well, let's also be honest. It's a wedge that is fully bladed. There's a limit to what you can do. It's mm-hmm. a matter of companies finding a unique way to do it, which yeah. I think you've accomplished here.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because we were talking about you know, tour players and why this hasn't been done before. And they've quietly been doing a lot of these adjustments just by grinding wedges and taking weight off in certain places. And if you've ever spent time on a tour truck or in the wedge area at a tour event, you'll see a lot of the adjustments that are being made on wedges are on the grinding wheel. And the average consumer doesn't get that, other than, you know, going for all the different grinds that might be available to them. But they don't get that adjustability through the process. And so really, it's being brought to them for the first time.
So I want to expand on it a bit, because I think from a casual golf or casual golfer perspective, it might be a little bit over the top to mm-hmm. talk about purely technology-driven results. Mm-hmm. One thing that I think is very relatable for every golfer out there is they hit clubs until they like one. They hit clubs, especially for a wedge. The driver, you can dial it up, you can change the shafts, and this makes some pretty significant experience changes for that golfer, including weight. For a wedge, usually it's just the wedge, and you either like it or you don't. Now you have grind options, which is great, mm-hmm. but the swing profile of a wedge is, if it doesn't suit your game, it's pretty much a throwaway. And we made a change, and I'll use myself as an example.
Yeah.
And I'm not void of this either. I have wedges I'm incredibly fond of. I have wedges not 5 years ago that, regardless of how attractive they were, every time I hit them, I'm basically finding the hosel. And you switch a wedge, and I'm in the strike zone. So it's obviously there's more going on there. Mm-hmm. In this case, and we did a video, and you'll see the reaction that I have, everyone out there who happens to catch it on THP TV. We switched the weight from the heel, which is my preference, we mm-hmm. found out, to the toe. and I had totally forgot what it was supposed to accomplish. And as soon as I got back here and started, you know, that three-quarter topside and started bringing it down, I could feel that head changing in the way that delivered into the ball. Now, I was able to manipulate that on my second and second swing, but I had to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas the first swing with the wedge in the, or the weight in the heel, you know, that kind of did it for me. And I think that's what golfers might experience a little bit more as they go into it. Don't look at it like this is a crazy tech story that it's over your head. Look at it as you need to experience it to really understand what's going on. And not just in a full swing, in every swing you do with a wedge, because it's critical. You don't, just like putting, you don't need something that you're working against to put a good swing on it, because every swing then becomes different.
Yeah.
I love that experience. And the one other thing that I wanted to touch on was, I think your fitting locations will have different weights that will be that could be applied.
Yeah.
It goes from 2 to 10 grams, is that correct? In 2 gram increments? Yeah,
so I think that's a great point to touch on is, you know, one of the reasons that we call it a system, you know, with the products that we launch is, you know, it's not just a product we bring to market, it's a fitting system that comes along with it. And, you know, as we choose our partners, you know, we try and work with people who are going to use that system and really pay close attention in a like-minded way to fitting variables the way we do. There's not a lot of wedge systems out there in the world from a lot of the other OEMs. Our system has 12 different heads, and so that's a 50, 54, 58, and each one has all four grinds. And then, to your point, we've got all these different weight options. So the stock option would be 2, 2, and 8 grams, so three weights, 2 2-grammers and 1 8-gram. And then, you know, at the end of the fit, after you've selected your shaft, your length, you can start swing weighting it to really dial that in. Or if you so choose, buy the whole weight kit and bring it home and have some fun.
If that's what golfers like to do. Let's be honest here. You're giving the freedom to change on the fly. And I know for a fact it is always the product's fault, never mine, as a golfer who plays regularly.
Well, that's fair with your swing.
Come on. Here we go. But it's cool for golfers to go and do that, to change that experience. Maybe they've, you know, maybe they did a little damage somewhere and they changed their swing for a day or a week.
Yep.
Maybe they are working with a coach and are making subtle changes that put them in a different location as they drive through. This allows them to buy one wedge that can change based on the way their swing changes, mm-hmm. which is really cool.
Really cool, especially with the number of ways that people use their wedges. The varying face angles that people use, the varying types mm-hmm. of shots. And I'm watching you, again, as a pretty solid player saying, hey, watch me do this type of shot or this type of shot. Or when I've spent, you know, time on tour, you know, working with Roger Cleveland and watching tour players, they'd be like, how do you want me to hit this one? And they'll hit the same shot 5 different ways.
I can't believe you just packed me in with those guys. That's, well,
you're an elite company.
I'm a big fan of Roger Cleveland, I'll tell you that much. But then you said tour guys and you lost me completely. So, but I see what you're saying.
So the ability to move weights around depending on how you use that specific mm-hmm. wedge is pretty phenomenal. Maybe you're going to be a heel weight guy in a full swing, but maybe you're 60 degree, you only hit flop shots, and maybe you need that weight a little further out to the toe.
Keeping that toe open and chasing. Yeah. Absolutely. That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, just holding off on those shots. Like, maybe I don't want the face to turn as much.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's, wow. I didn't, because we looked at my absolutely well-used current set, and you can see how I use my 58. It's very much on the heel side and open.
Yep.
Because I like to play an open shot, And maybe you're right, putting that weight on the toe will support that move as opposed to kind of working against it.
Yeah.
Now you've got me going, and that's terrible because I'm going to lose sleep over that
time. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of fun experimenting with these wedges that, you know, again, at the surface level, it drives performance and we can match your kind of your full swing and fit you better. But the amount that you can play with it for the variation of shots is going to be super cool for people.
Yeah, and it's not the only significant fitting system you guys have right now.
Correct.
We've walked through the EAS putter fitting cart, which was, I wouldn't say mind-numbing, but certainly provided a lot of context as to the what's and the whys over things I had figured out. Fortunately, I had a great experience at Club Champion a couple years ago where we walked through my stroke, I know where I sit. I'm very tuned in with my putter, knowing that I'm slightly close to start, slightly open when I make contact. There's a lot of things that I did, and that system just is a great education piece, let alone a fitting system, for people to understand, well, I'm always putting the ball right. Have you changed your heads? Yeah, I changed the heads. It didn't do much. Have you changed your hosel option? Have you changed your alignment setting? Not a lot of people would say yes to that. Yep. They say they change models, but it's never really a deep dive on the more critical elements of a putting stroke, which would be how the toe hangs, and what you're using to align the ball. We also both have an incredible fear of using a ball to align.
Yes, we do.
So for everyone out there, I know Club Champion has the fitting carts or is going to be getting...
They have them all on all their doors now. Okay. Yeah.
So that's a great place to experience that. But in a quick little segment here, can you tell them what to expect when they go and see this red gearbox looking setup?
Yeah, call it a toolbox. And the reason we call it that, because it truly is a tool for fitters. And even whether they're fitting in a dowel putter or anybody else's, there are some certain elements that you can pull out of this and really learn. And it's one thing that David hits on all the time is use this to learn. You know, there's not a lot of kind of putter fitting specialists in the world. And by using this toolbox and kind of going through the training and the process that David has implemented over the years, is you can be one. And that's a pretty cool experience. But, you know, it starts with fit for aim. And it's funny because you pulled your gamer out and I looked at it and said, oh, you probably aim left with where your sight dot is and with the type of putter that you have. Sure enough, we put you on our aim system with the mirror and the laser and you aimed a little bit left. It's been fun for me learning about the system and the process and being able to identify those things so quickly now. Yeah. And then also being able to put something in your hands that I can get you aiming at the hole within 3 to 5 minutes and blow your mind, number one, because you didn't know that you had aim biases potentially before. And that will get rid of some of the compensatory measures that people put into their strokes. Yeah. So, you know, at the very surface level of the toolkit, you know, it starts with aim. David always talks about the triad of putting, which is aim, path, and speed. And with all the different elements in the cart, between the different hosel options, we can fit for path. And with the different weight options, we can fit for speed. And so we've got the ability to really hit on all three sides of the triad with four really good-looking models.
I would say the most unique aspect of your putters, outside of the absolutely huge depth you go into your fitting process, is the rounded grip that surprisingly suits the experience. Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about this a little bit on a live stream we did, how annoyingly committed I am to a single grip.
Yep.
But I built out a couple before you got here in your system, and I was blown away at how not uncomfortable I was by the circular grip. And I think if you really step back and say, what have you been doing for the last 20 years from a putting grip standpoint, but then what have you been doing from a swing grip standpoint? And hold a circular grip all the time. Mm-hmm. So to put my hands on a circular grip shouldn't be that scary.
Yep.
and that was the takeaway. And I think hopefully those of you who go and experience it will have the same sort of reaction to it. But there's also other elements going on that supports that style. A couple of things we did with our arm hangs and even modified my grip a little bit to be more comfortable. Mm-hmm. Because I always used to chase that low and inside hand grip. And I'll go, I don't know why people would ever want to hold it like this. I feel like right? I'm like uncoordinated. Yeah. And I think there's a freedom to your grip that's really cool, and it allows for everyone who grips it in any way to feel comfortable.
Yeah, and I think the way that David has approached the game, and again, I always kind of told him that he did it the hard way, but he's always learning, always trying to find out different ways to do something and then basing that in research. So the round grip, he actually did tests with, I believe it was Campbell University PGM students, and what he found was they were able to align a lot better with a round grip because they didn't have this kind of zero gauge where the flat edges, force you into a specific setup with your grip. Mm-hmm. And really, if that grip is, you know, aligned 1 degree off, you're going to have some problems, and you're going to have to make compensatory measures in your stroke. After the live stream, I was going through the thread of all the comments, and there was a number of people that this one shook specifically.
Yeah.
And they're like, huh, I wonder if my grip is on straight. I wonder if that's affecting my stroke.
That's a conversation. Like, I do my own grips. Yeah. And every time I do one, I'm freaking out as to whether it's accurate or not.
I'm afraid to do my own grips. And, you know, I've built clubs for, I'm not going to date myself, but at least 20 years now.
Yeah.
And I cannot build my own. I'll build them for friends. I'll re-grip for friends. But I make other people put my grips on.
I'd be really curious to know, because I'm so anti use a mark to line up a putt on mm-hmm. the ball. I use something on the green to get my starting point off. And yet I use a flat top on my putter grip, which is technically doing the same thing from an alignment on the putter itself standpoint.
It's going to dictate so where the,
like,
face is.
It's like two different sides of the same conversation, but I'm so committed to the setup that I have that I'm just allowing that to happen. And just like in the thread, I kind of hate you for exposing me to it, because now I'm going to have to go second guess myself and start using a circular grip to make sure I'm not leaving anything on the table.
Well, that, I think that's like the dirty dark side of working in the golf industry, because like we were sharing earlier, we tested the ability of people to line up a ball to a target. And we had this little laser tripod we took and we put over the line on the ball to show where we were aiming, and no one was anywhere near close to it.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, I was scarred and couldn't do that. And then I go and talk to David about the round grip, and I've got another little scar there that I'm working off right now. And you get a lot of those things, and, you know, people always say knowledge is power, and yeah, maybe it is, but it's also going to plant some doubts in your head as you move along, which is a good thing. It goes back to learning and learning how to learn.
I'm going to ask you a question that you won't answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because why wouldn't I? When are we going to see more product from Idel? When is the line going to expand into things like variable length irons and upwards from there?
No comment? No.
you can have... Well, I tried, everyone. I tried.
No, it's interesting because, you know, I think one of the common problems that golf companies make is that they try to go too big too fast, or, you know, maybe they're not looking at their cash flow and really understanding the financials of a business. And so we're going to take a very measured approach to growing the brand. And that's what, you know, our new ownership has allowed us to do and be a little bit more free with our growth. And, you know, from a sales perspective, when I'm told, hey, you don't have to go out and close a bunch of accounts, let's just focus on a couple. I'm like, wait a second, what? Like, oh, that's beautiful. So let's build this 3 to 5 year product roadmap and be very strategic about what we launch and when we launch to make sure we can support it. I talked about, you know, David doing some things the hard way in the past. Our fitting systems are not cheap. It is a hard way to commercialize products. Mm-hmm. And to have that robust of a system as part of your go-to-market costs can penalize you to some extent, but it's doing it the right way, and it's getting people to the right clubs and making them better. And so you'll see that dictate some of that strategy moving forward, and we're okay with that. And
let's put a little stamp on that right now.
Yeah.
Is Idel a putter company?
Absolutely not. And so I actually take offense to that sometimes. and it's funny because, and I don't mean this negatively against a lot of putter companies out there, but there's so many different putter companies, and it's a low cost of entry to get into golf.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every machinist can machine a putter and do a beautiful job at it, and there's a lot of pretty putters out there for people who, you know, prefer a certain look. But
let's call it what it is, boutique.
Boutique, yeah. But we, again, we're not working towards preference necessarily. We want to make a putter that is going to make you better, and we feel the way to do that is to go through a deep fit,
mm-hmm.
Understand what your tendencies are, and deliver a product that can help with those tendencies. So definitely unique on the putter side, but we consider ourselves a scoring brand. And you know, looking at putters, looking at the wedges that we've got out, you know, looking at what David pioneered with single length irons, and you know, there's been some followers in the marketplace, you know, really just pioneering different concepts to make people better golfers all around.
I have to go back to the taco conversation. We need a minute to just dive into what it is about tacos that are so critical to your livelihood.
Yeah, so I grew up in California, spent a long time there, probably 36 years, I guess. And we lived down the street from a place called El Patio's, phenomenal Mexican food, and probably ate there two or three times a week. And so it was just kind of, you know, by nature, I loved the food and I loved to cook, so I started cooking it. Went down to San Diego State, which is where I went to college, and obviously a big Mexican culture there, with Tijuana being 25 minutes away. So I spent a lot of time down there, and I've just kind of made it my goal to eat tacos pretty much everywhere in the world. So
not in Ohio, it's not worth it.
I've had tacos in Ohio, and there's certain places you can find, and you just have to know what things to look for. But sure. You know, if you're in Kuala Lumpur, I've got a taco spot for you. If you're in Tokyo, taco spot. Shanghai, I've got a taco spot. Like, everywhere around the world, I've found these places. And actually, the one in Shanghai is, you put that in any big metro city in the U.S., and it's probably going to be a top five taco spot.
Wow.
It is phenomenal.
Wow. That, I'll definitely, since I'm going to all those places very, very soon, I'll reach out and ask you.
I make my own tortillas at home too, which not all the time because it is quite a bit of work. But yeah, I'll get corn masa, mix it with water. I've got a cast iron; it's probably like a 6-pound tortilla press.
Wow!
It's an obsession. It's weird.
We had what I considered to be a phenomenal breakfast burrito today.
Yes.
What was your grade on that?
It was a little heavy on the potatoes, but other than that, it was really good.
Chorizo action.
They didn't come with a specific hot sauce. I also make my own hot sauces, and so I get a little picky there. But you know, flavor wise, overall flavor profile, I'd probably give it 6.8.
Okay.
Something like that.
It's not bad. With the heavy expectations of Mr. Costa here. I think that is an awesome look at what your brand's doing right now, scoring brand in Adele.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited to see how these fitting experiences are, I guess, experienced by just regular golfers who want a little bit more control on what they're purchasing. So really eager to see how that goes. And this is my favorite part of the episode, even though you've already asked, so you probably spent the last 40 minutes pondering it. Do you have any questions for me?
Well, you mentioned your hockey background.
Okay.
And, you know, when I think of the great hockey players, I think of lefties, and I see you swinging a club righty. And so I was wondering if you ever played around lefty, if you can play both ways, if you've ever tried to play golf left-handed.
I've never played hockey left-handed, so I'm righty through and through.
It's kind of a mismatch to your heritage, I feel like.
But. Yeah, the old man is a lefty, but he plays golf righty. He seems to be pretty fond of taking left-handed shots out of the rocks or beside a tree. I can't do that. I'm very much a one-side-of-the-ball kind of guy. So,
next question. I'm watching you approach the game and hit shots. I feel like you can be very cerebral in nature about your approach to the game. And even when you talked about wedges, how you don't like to have anything less than 95 yards. Mm. You know, tell me about your approach to the game. It sounds like you're probably always focused on your leave and your yardage out.
Yeah. So I play in a Palmer course in Cincinnati, one of my favorite spots, probably in Ohio, to play golf. And what Arnie does so well is he gives you freedom off the tee to put yourself in position without really causing trouble. Now, that could mean 90 yards in the hole. It could mean 190, depending on how good you move the ball. It started when I got a Sky Caddy. I have the SGXW now. I don't remember what it was back in the day, but it was that one of those handheld GPSs where I could get every single yardage, the yardage from the tee, which leaves me this yardage into the green, and I got super into leaves. And not the ones that fall from trees, like I'm left with into the hole.
Yep.
And I realized that full shot wedges for me were much, much more likely to result in a less than 10-foot putt for birdie than what you have me doing today, which is a 75-yard shot. Now, I think a lot of that comes from the variable in play. And I think from a mental aspect, it was always easier because I felt like there was a lot of pressure on those 50-yard shots, 60-yard shots, 70-yard shots. Whereas if I have a 95-yard shot or a 115-yard shot, I know exactly what club I'm going to pull and how I need to approach that swing.
Yep.
So, yeah, I wouldn't say cerebral. I have an idea what I want to do out there. And my goal is to stay away from the shots that I consider to be more difficult, not adding to the difficulty of my experience. And I like to be even keel. And mostly I like to have fun. And I can't have fun trying to touch shot a 50-degree wedge every hole.
Well, it's funny because, you know, as I play with friends that, you know, maybe are newer to the game, haven't played as long, I always ask them if they're going into it with a par five, they just pull, you know, the biggest lumber out of the bag possible. And I'm like, right? What do you doing? Like, what are you trying to do here?
Yeah.
And they're just, I just want to get it close. I was like, well, what's your favorite yardage? And they look at me like, I got three heads. And I'm like, and so, you know, hearing you talk about that approach just kind of refreshed my memory about how when I play with people who are newer to the game, I think that's one of the most important lessons that you can teach someone is, you know, focus on your good shots, where you're successful. And it just makes things just so much more fun.
The one thing that I find really interesting about that avenue is I think there are guys out there who want to bomb and gouge as much as they can, and that's the way they play. And if they don't do that, they feel like they're holding back. I have a great example. The fourth hole at my golf course is the most par 5-y par 5 we have, where it takes two excellent shots to get on the green through trees, around corners. You got to miss a bunker, can't pull it left because you're in trouble. It's all location based, and I have, for the longest time, I even went down to a hybrid off the tee, and it would drive guys crazy. And they say, why do you do that? Well, why would you not give yourself an opportunity? And the way I saw it, based on historical rounds, hitting a hybrid or a fairway wood off the tee, then putting it out to 100 yards, then having a scoring club go into it, it is a low-pressure effort to get a birdie look versus that high-risk shot followed by the high-risk shot, follow what might be a recovery shot, followed by a rage.
Yes.
You know, that getting between a tough par three to another tough par three by having a cakewalk of a par five, to me, is more valuable than having one to two eagle looks every 10 rounds played.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's an individual perspective and preference, but I'd always tell people, stay as even keel as you can because you never know what's coming on the next hole for you. That's
very true. All right. So, last question for you.
Perfect.
Other than myself and JB, obviously, if you could have anybody on this pod with you, who would it be and why?
On the podcast?
Yeah.
Well, I asked my dad if he'd come on, and he said, why the hell would anyone want to listen to what I say? And I said, why the hell would anyone want to listen to what I say? So, man, that's a great question. I've never really looked kind of the, like, arc that way. I've been so thrilled with everyone who's decided to be involved and share their stories with my listenership. It's been a thrill for me. I look at every week moving forward as an opportunity to share experiences and perspectives on the game, no different than the wedge and putter fitting perspective that Adele provides. And I've done this twice, at least, where I've just kind of stumped on it. I think if I had to pick one, and I've already mentioned him before, I think Wayne Gretzky would probably be my guy.
I was just going to guess Gretzky.
And I'll tell you why. I think growing up idolizing him and the way he went about playing hockey, perfect time for me growing up. I saw him go to LA, then finish his career out. But he's also connected into another very, very big name in the industry, which is Dustin Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to hear those stories, like what's it like being what you've accomplished and then sort of sharing that and mentoring a guy like DJ who has every talent imaginable. So kind of two similar guys coming from two different sports.
Like greatness sharing greatness.
Yes, exactly. It's got to be a thrill for him to provide that. And I just think it'd be a fascinating round of conversation. So yeah, maybe he's listening. come on, shoot me a message, or get on Twitter at Canada and Golf.
No, come on, deal. Wayne.
Yeah, no kidding.
Come on, Wayne.
Well, this has been a thrill for me, like I said, and I hope we can have you again on soon. And looking forward to talking a little bit about what's come of the wedges in the next couple months from you guys. So thank you, Chris, and good luck here in the near future for you guys.
I'd love to come on anytime. And like I said, we're excited for our growth, where we're going to be in the next year, 2-3 years, and you know, nothing but opportunity for us lies ahead. So happy to be on, and get back here soon.
Awesome. Hey, the weather's clearing up in a lot of locations. Maybe not Colorado, but I hear
not
way
quite
over
yet.
There, it's not bad. If you're playing golf this weekend, have a great time, and I'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.